Gascoigne going to have a crack? He is, you know. Oh, I say! Brilliant!
Oh, this young man is a sensation! Dele Alli, out of League One, into the Premier League! Oh, what a goal! It's Danny Rose on his Premier League debut!
Sheringham Fleck and Klinsmann is in!
He's got it lost under his feet and it's come from the middle!
Welcome back to another edition of the Internet's most dangerous Tottenham Hotspur podcast. It's Wheeler Dealer Radio. You guys went months without hearing us, and now you got us twice in a single week. I know you guys are feeling very blessed. So let's jump right into it. We've got a Tottenham Hotspur victory, 2-0 over West Ham United. Lo and behold, not only did we comfortably win a game, but we kept a clean sheet. I didn't think that was allowed anymore. Joining me tonight to talk about this wonderful victory is Ben Daniels and Brian Ashlock. Ben, as the resident grumpy guy on our podcast, how happy were you with this victory?
Yeah, super happy. I feel like I have to eat a lot of words from like 2 days ago.
I was about to say, so when we hear loud noises in the background during this podcast, are those fireworks or is that Harry Kane with a gun who has come to your house to exact his revenge for our previous podcast?
It's me fighting off the white nationalist hordes who are refusing to stay indoors during the pandemic.
So, you were pleased with the performance?
Yes. Do you want to say hi to Brian first, or should I just keep going?
Okay, let's say hi to Brian first. Brian, how are you doing? Did you enjoy the game?
I did. It was good. It was, it's always nice to beat West Ham. Especially because they were real smug after they were the first team to beat us at the new stadium last year. So anytime we can beat them is always good.
Did you realize we haven't swept West Ham in a season since AVB was here?
But isn't it interesting that it's AVB's mentor, Jose Mourinho, that's the first one to do it since him?
Just reclaiming the mantle, I suppose.
Yeah. I mean, and everybody else is out here like, oh, Jose's a horrible manager. He fights with all the players. But you know what he does? He beats West Ham twice.
Yeah. Do you want to bring ABB back?
I mean, why wouldn't I want to bring ABB back?
Yeah, what could go wrong?
Things seem to be going really well in France.
I can't think of a better solution to a manager who alienates his players, fights with the board, has issues getting transfers in, then bringing Andre Villas-Boas back to Spurs. I think that is clearly what this team needs right
Look,
now.
Look, at the very least, he's just so handsome.
Hey, Mourinho's pretty good for a guy his age. Like, I hope I look as good as he does when I'm, like, I don't know, 50 or whatever.
Well, yeah, but that's just because you're already starting at a deficit.
Yeah, oh, thanks, Brian. I appreciate that.
Jose Mourinho is only 38 years old, by the way.
Of course.
I mean, look, AVB took Marseille to second in the table this year in their shortened season, so he almost won a trophy.
Yeah, but they're also running him out the door, right?
I mean, they were trying to, and then they didn't, and they did, and it's unclear.
So I think the headline of this game is Harry Kane, who we were all very, very frustrated with after our return from COVID against Manchester United. But he looked like a different player in this game, right, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, I would, I think maybe my predictions were a little strident, but against Man U, he looked like just the worst version of what we could have expected. This guy who has been struggling with injuries for a couple of years now and put in a series of mediocre performances. The most cynical among us, who I certainly count myself among, that's exactly what we would have expected from Harry Kane. Just the increasingly hollowing out of a once great man. And against West Ham, he was just fantastic. He had 6 shots, which is his second highest total of the season, the most shots he's had since opening day against Villa. His expected goals return on the shots he took were the 4th highest of his career, which is honestly, as good as he looked, that's still shocking to me because the peak of Harry Kane's career was just remarkable. Well,
Harry Kane was the best, like, non-Messi striker in the world at his best.
Right, yeah,
so.
Undeniably. And so for him to put up a performance that ranks among some of his best, you know, just by the numbers, is just a shockingly... I still can't process the turnaround from one game to the next.
Well, there's some
all
fans.
It was just a little bit of rust, and like
it could be.
Get.
It's worth noting. I mean, he hasn't played a competitive match in like 6 months or something like that. You know, he's coming off a major injury. I mean, that's what I said on Monday was I hope it was rust, and knock on wood, it looks like that might have been the case. But, you know, and I think it's worth pointing out here because I've seen this from some Spurs fans. That's like, well, it was only West Ham. Well, yes. Like, I don't want to go get carried away with a performance against West Ham. But at the same time, like, we've watched Harry Kane and, to be frank, Tottenham Hotspur struggle against teams just as bad as West Ham, if not worse, in recent months. So it's...
We've blown it against Brighton, Watford, Norwich, Southampton. Like, just all the basement dwellers have not been... you know, free points for us.
Look, if all we get out of this, like, next few weeks of football is if we can beat the shit out of bad teams, like, that's not ideal, but, like, it's an improvement.
I mean, it's really all we have left. We have bad teams and Arsenal, who's a bad team, and Leicester, who are kind of in free fall. So it's just all bad teams. You know, I think watching the first half, it was easy to kind of look at Harry Kane's performance and say, and draw a distinction between how we played against Man U, which was set up very tight, very deep, and hope to hit them on the break, and think, well, he just doesn't have the legs for that anymore. And it was just frustrating to see him not be near the box and set up there, and he just can't make those, like, long runs. In the first half against West Ham, we saw a lot of sustained pressure by Spurs, and Harry Kane lived in and around the box. And you got to see him doing what he does best, which is, you know, make smart runs off the shoulder of defenders, little feints, create a like sliver of space for himself and just rip one. And he was doing that well. And I think it was, for me, I was looking at that and saying, well, okay, it's a very different kind of game. This is much more suited to this new, broken, limited Harry Kane who can still shoot but maybe doesn't have like the dynamic ability to play the well-rounded game he used to. And then second half kicks off, and we see him making like lung-bursting 70, 80-yard runs to get on chances at just a full tilt. And the first time he did it, I was like, holy shit. But the second time he did it, I was like, wow, you can do it twice? Like, you didn't just ruin your ankles? And you know, he finally got the goal that his all-around performance deserved, running onto a through ball from Son.
Literally didn't think he was capable of that anymore. Like that.
Yeah,
that,
not at all.
And I think what perplexes me the most, I mean, we've sort of touched on this a little bit, but it's just like, I can understand some rust against United and whatever, but it just, there didn't seem to be any of this movement or drive or hustle in that game. And it'd be like one thing if he, like, you know, his shots were late or he wasn't getting to the ball on time or, you know, he maybe started his runs late, but there just was, he looked like a statue in that game at a lot of various points. He was just so uninvolved, and maybe it just took a game to wake him up, but I mean, it was all industry in this match, and it was, you know, it was refreshing to see.
And that's the thing that I really noticed. And now look, I don't know anything about what it takes to get a Premier League athlete to match fitness. I barely understand fitness, like on a basic level for me as a human. But, like, the difference from the match on Friday to the match on Tuesday, it was 180 degrees different. Like, you know, like you said, his movement was basically non-existent against United. We talked about on the show, you know, he wasn't making runs. He was getting passed by players who were starting runs much deeper than him. He wasn't even getting anywhere close to dangerous positions. And then you see him, like Ben said, bust a gut like twice in the second half to get upfield and stay with the play and get on the end of good chances. And it's almost like he was, I don't know, he was ill for that first game, or because I don't know that like rust can be attributed to that level of difference in terms of effort and output, because to me we didn't even see that effort against United. Not that Harry Kane wasn't trying. I'm not saying he was being lazy. I'm not saying he wasn't trying. I'm just saying, like, he did not get above, like, a jog against United. And I don't know, maybe that was him trying to take it easy or what it was, but, like, it was night and day.
I mean, there is something to be said about athletes learning to trust their body after injuries or long layoffs, and maybe it was that. But this is, we're talking about something that, again, it's not opponent dependent here. Like, you know, it's about, you know, it was, I don't want to say effort, because it's not necessarily that he was like dogging it against United, but like he wasn't doing things against United that he was doing against West Ham. And these aren't like things that defenders were letting him do. It was just the sort of running and hustle that he was displaying were not things we saw against United. I'm perplexed as to why, because I feel like you guys are a little more tactically astute than I am, but I can't see a tactical reason why he was doing what he was doing against United. It's not like he was just hanging out in the final third and waiting for balls to come to him, which might not be a great idea, but would have made more sense as a strategy, like as a reason why he wasn't doing it. So I don't know what it was, but it sure was nice to watch.
Well, we talked about on this show that like he stood and watched the Bergwijn goal as opposed to making a run to keep Lindelof honest. And then in this game, you know, Son has a breakaway, you know, Aurier is getting down the flank in the 90-something minute, and Harry Kane is hustling into the 6-yard box to almost get on the end of another chance. Like, I just don't know that you can attribute this to ring rust or, you know, to, you know, getting to know your body. Like, maybe he just got some, like, really good steroids.
What do you think the media was like? Mourinho brings him into his office, like, Harry, I got this great idea. What if you run hard in this next match? Like, is that what happened? Like, it doesn't make any sense.
So the only through line I can attempt to draw here is, against United, you know, again, we didn't have any kind of sustained possession. And so he was doing a constant kind of like jog press across the front line and spent a lot of time deep trying to be involved in build up and sort of get on the ball. And, you know, it's possible that he, A, just like had worse starting positions, and B, was just generally kind of just slow burning himself at this like vague pressing attempt. But in this match, he, you know, as good as he was, he only had 10 passes in 90 minutes, which is, you know, just shockingly low. What signals to me is that he was not coming nearly as deep and spending time far from the penalty box and doing stuff. And also just because we had the ball so much. And I think also because Lucas and Son in particular, I think, were very good pressing off the ball. Dele too. I think Dele had a very poor game, but is always a good presser. I think that kind of allowed him perhaps to just sort of conserve and direct his energy towards the things he's actually good at, which is getting on the end of chances. And, you know, maybe he had a conversation with Jose that was like, you know, stop just drifting around the pitch like that. Stop staying so deep. You know, stay forward, and then when the chance comes to run, bust a gut, because we don't need you to, you know, vaguely jog press 90 minutes of a match.
I get some of that, but like
the only thing I can think of that isn't just like a steroid induced or like remarkable fitness turnaround,
or just like maybe there's a level like he got through a match and was like, okay, I didn't collapse when I started running, and I don't know, Mourinho's like, Harry, you gotta run more in the next match. I don't know. It's very, like, I don't get it. It was great to see. I hope it continues. Like, it was really fun to see. Anything, we might never get, like, peak Harry Kane back. Like I said, one of the best, like, top five players in the world. We might never get that player back, but if he's, like, 70, 80% of what he used to be, then, like, we're in pretty good shape, or at least, like, pretty good shape for what we've got up top.
Yeah, again, if Harry Kane can be like, you know, there's a period after his injury where he was not a world-beating striker, but still like a, as Michael Cayley famously said, a Danny Ings-esque, oof, you know, solidly good striker. And if we can get him back to that with the rest of the team around him, you know, that's workable. We can build off that. But if he's going to be the Man U Harry Kane, I mean, that's just not a guy you can have in your team. That's playing with 10 men and carrying a guy's legacy. So, you know, I'm going to wildly overpredict this match and say Harry Kane's back.
Can't wait to see him just stand around after getting like 9 days of rest against Sheffield. But it would be nice to see him do this again against Sheffield.
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think that's another game where we're going to have a lot more of the ball. So, I mean, if, you know, like Ben says, it's the issue with maybe him, us being in possession versus out of possession, him having to do a jog press, him not having to do that, you would expect that would be a game that he would not have to do as much pressure on the ball. So maybe we'll see another good performance from him.
I'll tell you a player that I really enjoyed watching these last two matches. It wasn't a lot against United, but Lo Celso is just utterly delightful. He is a fun player to watch, and it is just what he does with the ball, the movement, the tricks. It's just, I'm really happy we bought him. And I don't think they've entirely figured out how to best use him yet either, which is like something weirdly I think is kind of promising, because I think, you know, once they sort of develop a more coherent plan around him or figure out a midfield to sort of stick him in, I think it's going to be really fun to watch, because he is just, God, you feel like he hasn't quite figured it out all out yet, but like when he gets there, it's going to be something special. He's a really fun player.
Yeah, I thought he was wonderful. And it's just dramatic, the difference that he brings compared to someone like Harry Winks, who is basically just a worse version of the same job, a kind of two-way player who can pass and defend. I thought it was notable that against United, we had a whole conversation about this, about how Sissoko seemed to be being remolded into a true defensive midfielder, to just let him, you know, use his athleticism to do things he's good at and not rely on him to, you know, pass the ball or kick the ball or, you know, really touch the ball anywhere remotely dangerous. And I kind of expected to see a continuation of that with Lo Celso handed a more free and expansive role with Sissoko mopping up behind him. And we didn't really get that. We got Lo Celso being much more reserved than we know he's capable of. And, you know, he ticked the ball over well. He sprayed passes well. He launched counters really well. But, you know, we kind of kept him back and allowed Sissoko kind of equal freedom to venture forward. And I think if and when we finally settle on making Sissoko the defensive midfielder he maybe could be, and giving Lo Celso free rein of the pitch to just sort of run shit, I think that's when things might really actually take off for him.
Well, it's kind of interesting, because when Lo Celso was at Betis, he was played sort of all over. I mean, he's played all over by Setien, and one of the reasons for that is there were some holes in that Betis team, but also, like, Lo Celso was good enough that he could just do all these different things, and I think we're seeing a not quite as expansive version of that at Spurs, but it's just he's such a talented midfielder that you can sort of, you could just do so many different things with him. But I agree with you, Ben. Once we sort of build a more coherent structure around him that really, you know, means that we don't have to use you to plug this hole or that hole all the time, you know, I think he's just really going to soar. I mean, it's because I don't know if they're, like, the style of play exactly corresponds, but in terms of how he's being used right now, it kind of reminds me of some of how Modric was used in sort of early Redknapp, you know, where it's just like, God, you're so good. Let's, like, fucking just, we'll just use you in these positions where it makes some level of sense. And they're not necessarily highlighting him, but he's getting the job done, so.
We needed a left winger, so Modric was playing left wing, even though that wasn't his best spot, and then we finally found a home for him. And I think Batiste also was, you know, using Lo Celso in a much more Christian Eriksen-esque number 10 sort of role where he could score and assist and whatever. And it's not clear whether, you know, I mean, I think he has the tools to be an effective 6, 8, or 10 on the pitch, and it's just a matter of finding the right balance between him and the rest of the team. But I think wherever you put him, he's going to give you a lot.
What I think is impressive about him is I think he's been ill-served by this year, because there's been so much disruption, you know, between his injury, what happened with Pochettino, now Mourinho coming in, now with COVID, then he had another injury, and it's like, you know, he hasn't really had a chance to get settled, and you can still see what a great player he is. And I don't know, like I said, I think once the team's a little more settled next season, I think we're going to see something really special out of him next year.
Well, I sure hope so.
Yeah. Now, speaking of Argentines, we might as well continue that theme. Eric Lamella with another good one. I mean, he is... God bless Eric. Probably my favorite Tottenham player from my time as a fan. He is just... It's delightful to watch, just to see this sort of resurgence. And I don't know about you guys. Certainly, he seems... Of all the games I've watched, and I haven't watched as... I don't think I've watched as much Premier League as you, Ben, since it's come back. But he... Or Brian, I don't think you've watched as much as Ben either. I don't know. Lamella might be the most sort of like full speed player I think I've seen since the Premier League came back in terms of intensity and going at it. And it's just, that's kind of surprising to me. I mean, I guess he had a long layoff to get healthy. I don't know why I'm so shocked by this, but he looks real good and just really dialed in. And I'm not saying there aren't better players right now than him, because there are, but I don't know if anybody's quite as up to speed as he is, because he is. I mean, he is really sort of dialed in. I don't know if that's just my proclivities for Lamella blinding me to other things, but it certainly feels like he's up to speed in a way that not a lot of other people are.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think him and Sissoko are the two that you look at in terms of fitness in the Tottenham midfield, and the two that looked, at least from the start against United, to be in the best game shape. And yeah, I mean, Lamella has these runs. I mean, it is one of the reasons why he is so endearing to so many of us. It's because, he will have a 5 or 6 game stretch where he puts in shifts like this, and then he will get hurt or go back to being bad Eric Lamella, or he'll get suspended for having done a murder, or, whatever it may be.
Has never been sent off in his career.
It's incredible. It's incredible.
Which is insane, considering, two-footed tackles on Peter Cech on a yellow card. I think it's been really good for him to come back and to show what he's capable of. I think, when, the last year and a half or 2 years, when we've kind of, lost Christian Eriksen, we've always kind of said, okay, yeah, Eric Lamella can come in and he can do this role where he links midfield and attack, and it never really quite came off, or Eric was still recovering some fitness, and, I think kind of the long layoff here actually did him some good, and it's maybe allowed him to get more in tune with Jose Mourinho's tactical setup. And because, in both of these games, he's done some really good work in linking up attack. And even in this one where what did he get, 30 minutes, 35 minutes? He hits a side netting. He wins the ball high up the pitch. He's involved in the move that eventually leads to the Kane goal. He just does, a lot of good stuff. And it's easy to see why managers like having a player like him around.
I mean, he's such a Jose player. I mean, if mm-hmm. you think about someone like Oscar, Jose loves taking a creative 10 who is willing to work his ass off and kind of depressing those creative instincts and making him just a hardworking monster who still has those abilities, so that when he does win the ball and does, do the things that graft produces, he's in a position to make shit happen for the rest of the team. And he's always loved guys like that. And I think if he can stay fit, which is always the question mark around Eric Lamella, he's a guy that Jose is sure to love. He's a shithouse with some flair.
And I mean, especially where we've got kind of like this little mini season where we've got, 9 games. We had 9 games and we're now, 7, I think that's how math works, 7 games left in the season, and you're playing, lots of condensed games. This is a real chance for Lamella to get in and do some damage, quote unquote, and maybe set himself up for a big season next year as well. I'm excited to see what he does over the next 7 games, and I just kind of hope that
it's blowout of knee is what's going to happen.
That's what I was going to say. I'm kind of got my fingers crossed that he doesn't do a hammy in the next 3 weeks, but we'll see.
What's funny to me too is just this, he seems like that guy who shows up at the pickup game taking it a little too seriously, or the Sunday league match where everybody else is there for a nice friendly game, and he's like, no, I'm going to go boom with both feet. like, this is, I'm here to play, guys. And, you know, everyone else is still sort of getting their feet back under them from COVID. And Eric Lamella's like, no. I'm here to take your feet out from under you. It's, I love Eric Lamella. It's really fun. If this is his last run, I'm glad we're getting to watch it.
I'm still waiting for him to, like, really disgustingly nutmeg someone. Just, like, in a completely and totally, you know, Andrus Townsend.
Yeah. That's still got to be just Danny Rose putting his hands on his head in the background. It's incredible. God bless Eric Lamella. Are there any other?
Actually, my favorite Danny Rose moment, like more so than the goal in the North London Derby, is just his reaction to Eric Lamella doing that to Andrus Townsend. Is like,
there's an interview, if you ever watch it, there's an interview of Danny Rose talking about that, and it's incredible. Are there any other positive performances? I think there's an elephant in the room that we have to talk about, but are there any other positive performances you guys would like to highlight?
Absolutely. I mean, Eric Dyer is still good.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, that's Dyer weird. And Davidson, like, who would have thought that would be a functional center back pair, let alone like maybe an actually good one?
Like, I know, like, a lot of Spurs fans and people on this podcast have their feelings about Jose Mourinho, but, like, Jose sorting out a defense has to be the least surprising thing. Like, if you were going to say there's what would you expect him to do well at Spurs, that would have to be pretty high on the list, right?
Well,
right,
no.
But I wouldn't have expected him to sort it out with
those
that,
two players,
this back line. Yeah, like, if you had told me that he was going to turn, you know, Tanganga into a Premier League quality center back, or if you'd told me that he would be running out Dyer and Davinson, I don't know. I mean, I would have believed you if you'd have said Alderweireld and then any other combination of center back. But no, I don't think I would have. Davinson and Alderweireld seemed the most reasonable Jose center back partnership to me. I definitely didn't think Dyer was going to be one of his center backs. I figured Dyer would be his, like, Nemanja Matic defensive midfielder kind of guy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, you know, if you told me Jose took, like, an old center back on the last legs of his career and put him in a deep block and made him super effective doing the things he always did best and couldn't do in a more modern system, that I would believe.
You but, just like, described Eric Dyer.
Well, I mean, you described, like, Toby Alderweireld.
I know.
Dyer is still a spring chicken, you know, by comparison.
Yeah, but he's on the last legs of his career because he got half his colon removed or whatever the fuck he did.
Yeah, yeah, maybe. I mean, maybe not, you know.
Apparently,
like,
not.
You look at his, like, United team, and, you know, that's a team where he spent his entire time there complaining about the caliber of center backs he had at his disposal. And, you know, he'd bitch about Eric Bailly, who is, you know, very dynamic and, you know, probably their best center back, but very injury prone. He never seemed to, like, figure out how to use guys like Phil Jones or Chris Smalling or Lindelof. Like, it was not the Jose of old, who just managed to make a lockdown defense happen. You know, he kind of survived on the back of David De Gea being remarkable for a couple seasons. And, you know, he's never been good with young players. So, yeah, Davinson and Dyer as that pairing is shocking to me. But, boy, they both look like something else. I mean, Dyer especially. I mean, penalty aside, I thought he was one of the best players over the last two matches.
We don't have a great understanding of sort of what happened to Eric Dyer. Like, it doesn't seem like it was a play-related injury. We know he had an appendectomy at one point, but it seems like he had some, like, illnesses or something. I don't know, but I guess I assumed he was cooked just because of how he looked on the pitch, but maybe, again, like Lamella in a weird way, like, that guy just needed an extended break. And if he's back to being a useful player, that would certainly change my calculus of what Spurs need to do in the offseason and what we look like moving forward.
But honestly, like, even injuries aside, Eric Dyer never looked like a center back. He always looked like Mauricio Pochettino had a bit of managerial magic turning him into a defensive midfielder and finding a way for this guy who clearly has a lot of skills to be effective on the pitch without being a liability. Because at center back, he's always looked like a liability.
Well, do you remember...
He's likely to lose a player or give up a dumb foul or whatever, but
Do you remember a few years ago when Mourinho was flirting with him, when Mourinho was still at United and there were like rumors? Well, do you remember at the same time, like, Pochettino and Dyer were kind of butting heads over what his role was? I remember there being an article where Dyer was, like, talking about sort of, you know, what Mourinho and him were talking about. But in the same article, he talks about how I think Pochettino, correct, and if I'm getting this wrong, I apologize, but this is my memory of it. Pochettino saw as, like, what do you see your future as? And, like, Dyer said center back, and Pochettino was, like, midfielder. And it's interesting because maybe this is a case of where Mourinho saw something in his play where he was like, aha, you know, I know what that is, or I can use it like that. And I'm not saying that's a special genius of Mourinho here, but, like, maybe there's just something Mourinho saw in him, and maybe that's something that he's seen in him for a long time, so he's had a lot of time to think about it. I don't know. It's just an interesting coincidence.
I mean, it seems like a thing where they were both right. For what Mauricio Pochettino wanted a back line to do, and what he wanted a midfield to do, mm-hmm. you know, I think he was right that Eric Dyer was more suited to playing in that midfield. And for whatever reason, Jose Mourinho had a different opinion. And in this system, it's certainly working. And if it makes Dyer happier, so much the better.
I'm still a little concerned about why Alderweireld's not playing. Because
that is concerning. Because... But as far as we know, there hasn't been any feuding going on there. Have we heard any injury?
No injury that we know of. And, it like, again, not to take away anything from the pairing of Dyer and Davinson Sanchez, because they've been very good so far, penalty aside. But Toby Alderweireld is still by far our best defender, I think. And we just gave him a big contract extension in January. And... It doesn't make sense to me that he's not playing. I don't get it. And
it's one of those things where you see these moves, and we're gonna talk about Ndombele in a minute, but you know,
we're sort of talking about it with Ndombele.
Well, exactly.
He hasn't played yet. What are we?
But you know, there's that part of your brain where we're doing right now, which is like, why the fuck isn't he playing Toby? This is super weird. We just signed him to an extension, and we all know Mourinho's history with freezing guys out. But at the same time, like, there's that part of my brain where it's like, well, we don't know everything in terms of, like, is he fighting a knock that isn't, like, a super serious? Like, is there a reason he's not playing? Like, I would love to understand why. I mean, there's enough Belgian journalists sort of floating around English soccer that I feel like we would have heard something if there was something really nasty going on. But maybe we just haven't heard it yet. I don't know. It would be really nice to know why. Because, again, like Brian said, it's been really successful. It's hard to argue with how successful it was. But we did just sign Toby to a fairly substantial extension. And I'd be curious to know what the fuck is going on.
And it's weird because it's like, it seemed like his relationship with Mourinho in the wake of Pochettino is what made him recommit himself to
yes.
Spurs.
Yes, 100%. Yes.
And for that to now be out the window.
If that's what it is.
What the hell happened?
Yeah.
I don't know.
Maybe you didn't like his Zoom background? I don't know. I mean,
also, we've given a lot of plaudits to Dyer, but Davinson looks like a man reborn. You know, that first season he was here playing in the back three, I thought, you know, you could see why we paid a record fee for a defender. And then since then, he has looked, you know, just increasingly lost on crosses, easily turned.
It seemed like the more sort of responsibility they gave him in terms of reading the pitch and making plays, it seemed like the more he struggled.
Right. And now, I think he also looks much trimmer since the restart. He looks like he was always like a big dude. He looks much slimmer.
Which is funny, because the only photo I remember seeing of him during the COVID break was him and his girlfriend with a big Call of Duty themed cake. So I guess that's the only thing he ate that had sugar in over the break.
Yeah, maybe. But I don't know. I don't know if, like, trimming down has, like, given him a little more agility. He's made him a little less top-heavy. But I don't know. He looks really sharp.
Even, you know, and it's not just those two. Davis, whatever. You think I would have settled on a pronunciation by now. Davis looked way better, and I think that's another case of somebody who got healthy over the break, because he was fighting some injury issues, I think, before the break, but Mourinho seems to be using him pretty well. Those are two decent games he's had so far since we came back, which, you know, not always the case with him lately, and it's been impressive.
Yeah, I mean, I've been his biggest critic over the years, but I have been very pleased with what we've seen.
It's been, I mean, I don't know, like, I've seen some people saying it was not the best performance against West Ham, but I was very pleased with that game. It was, it's just West Ham, you don't want to get carried away, but like we said earlier about Harry Kane, we've played worse against worse teams, so I'll fucking take it.
Yeah, I mean, I think, honestly, the only bad performance on the day was Dele Alli, I thought.
And that's relative, frankly.
Lucas was good. Lucas missed a very easy chance in the first half, but pressed well, put himself about, took some rips. But, yeah, I think Dele was the only guy who looked poor. And, again, it's his first game back. If this is what happened to Harry Kane after one game, who knows? Maybe we'll get a really good Dele next time.
So we need to talk about the elephant in the room, which is Ndombele. He sat for the second match. I don't think he didn't play at all in this match again. And there was some reports immediately after the game that his relationship with Mourinho was irreparable. And the next day, Julien Laurens at ESPN said that he did that. Just Ndombele did not want to work with Mourinho anymore. Now Ben, I think you put on Twitter after the game the all Mourinho rejected 11, which is pretty good of players that Mourinho has sort of thrown out of the bin and have gone on to play well elsewhere. There has been some walking back in the media. There was an Athletic article today that had the dual leaks of Ndombele is committed to making it work at Tottenham and he admires Daniel Levy. Which sounds to me like representatives of his doing damage control.
And he loves the stadium.
Yeah, and he loves the stadium. Again, that all sounds like damage control from representatives right now.
There sounds was also, like they interviewed Daniel Levy.
Or they interview people who want Daniel Levy to like their client. And there was also quotes in the article from players who have been impressed with him before in training but don't think he is... They think he could be doing more in training. So there's a lot of what I think... interesting leaks in that article. I don't know where this stands. I do know that I would put a lot of money on Ndombele starting the next match because Mourinho is just going to want to prove his critics wrong at this point, which would be great if Mourinho's got a fire lit under him that he's going to repair his relationship with Ndombele purely to stick it to the British media. But I don't know. Like, Brian, you are a little bit more familiar with French football than us. I don't know how much you watched Ndombele at Lyon, but I mean, what is your sort of take on all this? Because I think we know where Ben's going to go with a lot of it. So let's start with you, Brian. Brian, did you mute your mic?
Yeah, I did.
Yeah, okay.
And I had a really good joke to start it off, but I can't do it now. So, let's see. My takeaway...
Tell us the joke.
Nah, it's not that funny.
Do the joke.
I think my takeaway from all this is basically that this is all very, very stupid. And no matter what the actual story is, if the story is actually that Jose is freezing him out or that he is unfit and not trying at training, or if none of those things are true and it's just tactical decisions, whatever the answer is, it doesn't make any sense. All of the potential options for what is going on here are stupid. This is our club record signing. This is a guy who, when he has played, has mostly played pretty well. I can't really think of any specific matches where Ndombele was like markedly horrible or like worse than his midfield partner. And especially now where we've got a situation where, you know, you have a fit Moussa Sissoko, which you didn't have for quite some time. You have a mostly fully fit Gio Lo Celso. To not use Ndombele at all is weird. And you know, to not have used him as a sub in either match is even weirder. And you know, I'm sure Ben is going to hit the highlights of, well, why this is Jose Mourinho's fault and why Jose should be fired and, you know, strung up by his toes and whatever. But whatever the answer is, if it's Jose, if it's Ndombele, if it's agents, if it's, you know, effort, overweight, whatever it is, it's stupid because it absolutely should not be happening. This is a guy that should be the centerpiece of kind of what we're doing. And
so I believe all of it's true. I believe that he's probably not as fit as he could be. I believe Mourinho's freezing him out because he's overreacting to it. And I believe his agents are trying to dial it back because the initial stuff that came out was too strong. And they're not sure if their client's going to end up at Barcelona or not. I think this is ridiculous. Like, Mourinho, like, I don't care if he's not fit. Unless he's, like, literally bringing donuts to practice. Like, Mourinho should be finding a way to make this work. And also, if Ndombele is showing up to training in not great shape and he's not injured, like, after a fucking 3 months off, that's not great either. I'm curious how this resolves. I'm not convinced he's leaving because I think the financial situation Spurs are... A, I don't think there's going to be a lot of teams that are going to be able to pay to take him off of us. B, I... don't think Spurs are in a situation where they want to go out and buy new players. And see, he's our fucking club record signing. Like, you're going to want to try to make this work. This isn't fucking Giovanni Dos Santos. Like, you know, you want to make this happen.
Yeah, you don't admit defeat on something like this after, you know, 12 months.
You know, and if I'm Daniel Levy, I'm pulling Mourinho in my office. I fucking figure it out. Like, you know, until he, like, is fucking your wife, you find a way to make this work. Like, you know, you coddle him, you do what you can. And,
even,
you know,
if he's fucking his wife.
Exactly. I mean, you know, now, again, we're not in training. We don't see, you know.
He might be in better shape.
Yeah. We don't see exactly what's going on. It's just ridiculous that he's not, if he is hurt, which it doesn't sound like he is, like, fucked up hurt, you know, that's one thing, but, like, there's no excuse to not be using him in some capacity right now. And again, I think it's maybe not as cut and dry as Mourinho's in it. Maybe it is. I don't think it is. That it's not purely Mourinho's just being an asshole here, but Mourinho's the fucking coach. It's like he needs to find a way to make this work with a player that good. It's not like we're talking about fucking, like, Ryan Mason here. Like, you know, this is our club record sign, and you find a way to make it happen and, like, you know, fucking start him. Because I don't think this is irreparable. I think he's mad now. He'll play a couple games. He'll find out Spurs aren't willing to sign him, and he'll fucking knuckle down and get to it next year. And if he still, like, kicks out, then we'll know it's really irreparable, and Mourinho can feel good about himself because it wasn't his fault at the end of the day. But, you know, they have to try to make this happen because he's too good not to.
So here's why it's all Jose's fault.
Okay.
So, even if Ndombele is not as fit as he should be, he has had him at the club now for 8 months. If Ndombele is not getting fit, is not becoming the player that he should be, then, well, A, that's on Jose, because whatever he's doing, this freeze-out shit, has not worked. It has not motivated him to become a fitter player. So, the man management tactic that Jose has taken has failed. Even allowing that this is as fit as he can get, he is only capable of playing in short bursts, he can't give you 90 minutes, then you have a guy who is as obviously talented as he is, who, even if he can't start, there's no excuse for not bringing him on for 30 minutes a game, because if he can give you 30 minutes, then he's going to give you a good 30 minutes. And especially after the restart where we have fucking five subs.
Exactly.
Like, there is no reason to not let this guy play the minutes that he can. Because you know what's going to motivate him to get more in shape? It's playing a little bit, getting a taste for it, and doing a good job. Like, I guarantee you, I'm not a manager here, but I guarantee you, as a player, you know, being told, like, look, I only think you're fit for 30 minutes. You need to prove to me that you're fit for more. But I'm going to play you the 30 minutes that you're fit for. Like, that has got to be a better motivating strategy than not playing him.
Well, so here's the thing.
Not playing him all has led to whatever this impasse looks like.
Well, so here's the thing. So, oh, go ahead. Sorry, Ben. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, I'm just, it's unforgivable. Like,
no,
he's
it's,
a record
it's,
signing.
It's, here's...
He's always been good. The only knock on his performances at Spurs has been, he maybe gets gassed a little too quickly, and by 50, 60 minutes, we've had to take him out. Like, even if that's the case.
Yeah, you find a way to work around it.
You find those 60 minutes. You find those 30 minutes. Like, we have a need for it.
Here's the thing that from an outsider perspective, it seems like, you know, Mourinho tried calling him out in the media, you know, as a way of motivating him. Now, I don't know if that's a good idea or a bad idea, because I think that's a strategy that probably depends on the player. Mourinho's trying it. You know what? Like, Mourinho's kind of lost it over the last few years, but he's got a history of success. He thinks it's worth trying, whatever. I thought it was pretty fucking clear that, you know, when that whole, like, fucking COVID training stunt that happened in the field, like, it seemed to me, now maybe I'm being too generous here, it seemed to me that was his signal of trying to be like, I haven't given up on you, I'm going to work with you, and, you know, like, him trying to do, like, I want to work hard with you, and then it backfired because of, you know, he shouldn't have been fucking training with him in COVID. But, like, it seemed to me like that was, like, a signal. Now, maybe he's just signaling to, like our friend Ed would say, like, he's just trying to make it look a certain way in the media. Maybe that's all it was. But it seemed to me like that was a signal of him taking a more conciliatory or supportive approach. And I'm just, like, a little, like, unless something happened, and again, from my perspective as a fan, it would have to be pretty fucking bad for him to, like, go back on this. But unless something happened, it seems like he's gone back on that, or he's, like, stopped trying, and I don't fucking understand what it is. Because we saw plenty of pictures of him in training. We know for a fact, because we all noticed when Lo Celso wasn't in training. We know he was out there training. I don't understand what's going on. If he doesn't want to play him against United, and then he was going to play, like, 60 or 70 against West Ham, like, okay, maybe not how I would use resources, but that makes a certain level of sense. I don't understand why we're sitting him for two games, unless there's, like, an injury, which I think we would have heard about, that he just needs through the end of this week to get fit for, and then he'll be ready for Sheffield. Like, I don't fucking understand, especially like you said, Ben, when we've got, like, five subs to play with, why we're not using him for, you know, if you can't go 50 or 60, then use him for 30, use him for 10, use him for 15. You know, fucking find a way to use this guy, if nothing else, to signal to him, you're a part of my plans, buddy. Now, I don't know. I think they're going to figure it out, just because hopefully Mourinho's that petty with the English press, and he's going to make it work with this player just to show them. But I think he's too valuable to the club to make this happen, to not fix this. But it's Mourinho. He's thrown plenty of guys overboard before. But the thing that I think we all overlook with that is he threw over guys who were much more affordable at that time to throw overboard than, you know. I mean, he's going to command, you know, we're not letting him go for less than £60 million, right? And I don't think we're going to be thrilled about doing that.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're right. There's the money that would be required for any sort of Ndombele deal is going to be prohibitive for most of the clubs in the world. I mean, we're
especially
talking about,
in COVID, you know, time. Like, you know, everybody's hurting for money right now.
Yeah, and again, I think, you know, there's no way in my mind that Daniel Levy is willing to take a loss on this or to throw up his hands after 12 months and say, you know, this can't be this, you know, we can't deal with this. I think he's much more likely to have a come to Jesus meeting with Mourinho and say, look, you've got to at least play him to, like, preserve his value or something. But we paid what, 62 million euro for him. There's no way that he's attracting, you know, that much in terms of a transfer fee bid from Barcelona, PSG, or anybody else that might be interested in him. He's just not going to, and he's our player, so we might as well be using him.
I don't know. The way that his agents seem to be sending dueling signals over the course of 2 days, I find very interesting. And, God, I just hope he plays against Sheffield, balls out. Mourinho says, I told you so, to claim credit for something he had very little to do with, and we can all just get on with our fucking lives. And then Ben is apparently going to walk in front of a car because he's so distraught over this.
I'm going to push Jose in front of a car.
What do you think is the likelihood this, and like, what do you think is the likelihood Ndombele is playing for Spurs next year? I'm generally, like, right now we're recording this on Thursday night in America, just for clarity's sake, in case it comes out tomorrow that Ndombele is taking hostages at Daniel Levy's home to get sold. But what do you think the chances are that he's a starter for Spurs next season?
Well, I think it's hard to say, because I think the recent news stories kind of put the club in a position where you know, we have this narrative now where there's a beef between Jose and Ndombele, and he's not playing, and Jose hates him, and he hates Jose. I think he's going to start against Sheffield United, because I think that is a win-win situation for Jose. Either he starts and he's bad, and Jose can say, you know, this is why I haven't been starting him. He's clearly not ready. Or he starts and he's good, and Jose can say, he hasn't been ready. He's been working up to fitness. I finally decided, apropos of nothing, that he was ready to play, and look at what a good job he did. Trust my management skills. And if he does come play and is good, then I think Jose is going to be in a kind of position where he's going to have to maybe keep playing him. And I don't know, if we can get through the rest of the season where he's actually a contributor to the rest of the team, I think the case for keeping him becomes very, very strong. I think there's also the possibility that he isn't fit and he doesn't do a good job or whatever, or Jose is just an asshole and just refuses to play him regardless. Even so, I think you brought up earlier that picking him off our books is going to be very expensive. We spent $60 million on him. He's our record signing. The performance he's given this season, given the lack of time he's had in the team, has not been a $60 million performance. And Daniel Levy is not a guy to take a bath on a player. So as long as Jose doesn't draw a super hard line in the sand and say, this guy needs to go, I can't see the club taking a loss on him. I can't see Levy allowing Jose to not find a way to work with this guy.
And, like, I think if there was, like, if there was a reason to not play him that was, like, going to make Mourinho look sympathetic, like, this guy can't fucking, like, this guy can't complete three win sprints or something, or, you know, he, you know, shows up, like, 3 hours late for training. I don't know. If there was something that would be like, oh, yeah, you really got to sit a guy who does that, I think we would have heard about it by now, you know? And we're not. And I think, there's too much at stake for Spurs to not make this work. And maybe I'm just underestimating Mourinho, but, like, you know, we've talked about, like, I don't know how much I had to do with Salah, but certainly De Bruyne. I mean, Ben, who are some of the names on that list that you put together?
Yeah, so the team, and I think you do make a good point about there's, like, some differences here. So the team that I put together was Lukaku up top, and then Salah, Robin, Kevin De Bruyne, Juan Mata, Felipe Luis, Leonardo Bonucci, David Luiz, Glenn Johnson, and Peter Cech. And a lot of those guys were young guys who came in and, you know, hadn't really set the world alight yet. Lukaku was still kind of a youth player. You know, De Bruyne was good in Germany, but not so good that it was, like, obvious that you had to start him. Salah hadn't blown up at Roma yet.
Salah was more part of, like, my memory, and which could be wrong, my memory is he was more part of Chelsea's sort of weird player trading empire than, like, De Bruyne, for instance.
They bought him, they prized him from Fiorentina. He was had a good season.
Was he at Fiorentina before that? Okay, because I thought they got him from, what was it, Club Bruges? Who did he play for before Fiorentina?
Was he at Salzburg or something?
No, it was, we played him in the champ. They have that, like, those Barcelona colored kits, and they play in, like, Scandinavia somewhere.
Basel,
that's it. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, I'm not really
sure. I don't think Switzerland's in Scandinavia.
Whatever. Northern Europe, how about that?
But yeah, Bonucci was also a youth player. So, like, those guys are either, like, young up-and-comers. I think of the actually, like, established good players was they brought in Felipe Luis and then dumped him. Arjen Robben had been good for Chelsea for years, and they decided to make a profit on him to Real Madrid, who then moved him to Bayern, where he became, you know, unbelievable for a decade. David Luiz they sold to PSG before they bought him back, and Peter Cech was at the end of his career. So Ndombele is definitely unique. Mata also was kind of winding down before they sold him to United. He was still good, but not.
None of those guys had a huge price tag attached to them before they left, or immediately before. You know what I mean?
Right. I think Felipe Luis is the only guy on this list I can think of.
Lukaku was a bit of a "What are you doing there?" But Like, he wasn't, you're not talking about 60 million pounds they sunk right. into
they
him.
They bought Lukaku as, like, an unbelievable teenager and hoped he was going to be great, and lo and behold, he is. But yeah, so Ndombele is the only guy on that list who is a club record signing, who is obviously at the peak of his abilities, not a work in progress.
I mean, he is a work in progress, but not in the way that those guys are. Were.
So, not like Lukaku, who was like, he'd had a season of being good at West Brom. Like,
yeah.
It's different. So, yes, I will allow that it is maybe categorically different, and so perhaps there is a bridge to be built here. But,
boy. He has to. I mean,
even younger guys, like, you should have spotted that talent.
Yeah.
Like, De Bruyne and Germany was.
But this is what concerned me most about. I know you were, when Mourinho came to Spurs, you and a lot of people were very concerned about, he's an asshole, he's going to fuck shit up, he's going to be a piece of crap to, and just ruin our club. But the thing that, like, in terms of him working at Spurs, it always, like, ruined me is, like, he can afford to sort of fuck guys off at, like, Chelsea. They have the money to be like, you know what, Lukaku, like, I don't care if he's an up-and-coming prospect. I want a finished article right now, and I want to pay, like, fucking top dollar for him. And, like, you can kind of get away with that at some of the clubs he was at. I mean, Inter, you kind of couldn't. But, you know, even Inter had a lot of, like, you know, compared to other Italian teams, they had a lot of money to spend. And, you know, he can't do that at Spurs. Like, I think we have more money, at least we did when we had the new stadium revenues coming in. But we have a little bit more money than we used to. But, like, he's got to look at that roster. And it's like, you got to supplement that, buddy. Because, like, especially with, like, we're not making money off of boxing matches and, you know, fucking concerts and game day revenue. We're not making any of that money we thought we were going to be making with that new stadium that might have changed our ability to spend. So, like, you got to really figure this shit out in a way that he hasn't had to figure out in a long time. He can't spend his way out of problems at Spurs like he's been able to at every club since, I would say, he left Porto, certainly since he left Inter. And
well, honestly, even United, like, I think part of the problem there was his relationship with Pogba, who, you know, I think they came to a point where it's either we have to take a bath on Paul Pogba or let Jose go.
Now, I'll say this.
And there were other stuff going on, but, like, Paul Pogba was not just their record signing, but the world record signing. Like, they were not going to accept that. And I think that's the kind of line that Levy takes, is, like, firing Jose at 15 million a year with a 3-year contract is going to cost us like 30 million. But if we sell Ndombele, like, that's going to cost us, like, what are we going to get for him? Like 40 at most?
I mean, so we're going to break even. There's no way we don't, like, especially because we're talking about clubs like Bayern and Real Madrid and PSG. They're going to at least cover our costs. But you're right, is we're not going to make a profit on him.
I don't even know if we're going to, like, I don't know if someone's going to pay 60 million for a guy who wasted a year. Like,
that's true. You know, that's true.
So either we take a $20 million bath on Ndombele, or we take a $30 million bath on Jose. Like,
look, I think it's important to remember.
What's the better long-term buy? Even if we keep him and he's good, you know, he's a saleable asset. He's a guy who can recoup his value.
I think it's important to remember that Ndombele is not Pogba. Ndombele did not come here as one of the best midfielders in the world for a prolonged period of time. He's still our record signing. And to me, it's not necessarily... Like, to me, it's... If you're Daniel Levy and he comes in here, you probably made some things pretty clear about how this is going to work. And I understand Mourinho had us over a little bit of a barrel, like, given when he came in. But you made it. I would imagine things were made pretty clear in terms of, like, what's going on. And I would imagine in light of COVID, things have been made further clear about how things are going to work around here. And I don't think it's necessarily about you're choosing Ndombele over Mourinho. But, like, to me, the concern, if I'm Daniel Levy, is, like, you have to make this work. This guy's on our books. We can't afford to go do this shit every summer, especially if our revenues are being drastically cut like they have been. Like, you know, if we couldn't afford to do it before, like, to fuck off a guy like Ndombele before COVID hit, we certainly can't do it now. And it's less about, like, choosing the player over the manager, just in terms of, like, if you can't work within the confines of what a club like Tottenham is just going to demand of you financially, then, like, what the fuck are you doing here? like, make Ndombele work. We can't afford to go buy guys like him all the time.
And there's not an opportunity for guys like that to slip through the cracks. Like, Man City sure could have used a guy like him this season.
Yeah, it's like...
It might have kept Liverpool from winning a title by...
Yep.
You know.
Too bad he has all those tattoos that he doesn't have. So, you know, Guardiola didn't want him for some unknown reason that's just hard to divine. Yeah, it's just, you know, he's got to make it work. And he's got to figure out a way... You know, he can't afford to be throwing players like him off the deep end. And, like, the level of, given the situation we're in, given the talent that Ndombele has, and given Mourinho's history, like, the level of offense that Ndombele would have to give for me to be, like, okay with, like, burying his ass on the bench, it would have to be, like, who was that player at Fiorentina back in the day who decided he'd rather go back to Brazil for Carnival than actually win the league with Fiorentina? Like, it would have to be, like, that level of, like, what the fuck are you doing? And clearly that hasn't, or at least hasn't publicly been revealed yet. So, and I doubt we've reached that level of sort of intransigence. So Mourinho's got to make it work. Sorry, I've been rambling for a while now.
I mean, look, PSG put up with Neymar magically finding a way to be suspended or injured every year for his sister's birthday. So I'm sure that we can put up with whatever's going on in Tanguy's life.
I mean, Neymar is one of the best players in the world, so... There is a difference there. I guess you're willing to put up with incest, you know.
Have you got Lo Celso, so.
Good point.
Have we talked about Lo Celso's goatee thing?
It's better than Dele's.
Dele's mustache situations. So
is Lo Celso's mustache, like, or the upper part of his goatee, is that, like, a choice? Is it just how it's growing in? I'm kind of vague on this, because it doesn't look great.
Yeah, they should both forego the facial hair, just in general, I think.
Dele's looks just horrifying.
It looks like Dele was letting it grow out and then decided to make a fashion choice, and it hasn't gone well.
Maybe it's like a British thing that we don't understand.
Well, I'll tell you what. We have overlooked the worst hair choice on the team, which is Eric Dier going for a 2002 UFC fighter look, which is not great.
You don't like the Chuck Liddell haircut?
I don't like the Chuck Liddell haircut.
I mean, I'm sure he's a very proud boy.
Oh, my God. Brian, don't do that. Ugh. Anything else to say about this game? We got Sheffield coming up. That's probably going to be a big game in terms of us getting close to Champions League.
Yeah, I mean, Sheffield United have not looked good lately. You know, I think the beginning of the season, Sheffield United, who has gotten to this position, looks to be maybe a thing of the past. They're not a very deep team, and they've had some injuries to their back line. They've still never really found a striker. They've just sort of cobbled together a pseudo strike force out of a couple of okay guys who've gotten them like four or five goals here and there. I don't say the wheels are falling off. I just think there's a lot of limits to that team. And I think the level of performance doesn't look sustainable right now. They looked very bad their last two matches since the return.
Our former midfield target is not looking like we missed a whole lot there.
Yeah, Sanderberg just... I mean, you know, he might be good. He just doesn't look like a good fit for them. Honestly, they just don't have a lot going for them. And he is just a little conservative for their play. And playing him means they have to bench somebody who is a little more progressive. And I just don't think they can manage that.
I heard during their most recent match, like, there was one of the announcers said a stat that they've not beaten any of the teams above them in the league yet. So, you know, we're currently above them, so that bodes well for us. And I mean, the thing with them is, like Ben said, they've got one of the worst attacks in the league. I think only four or five teams in the league have scored less goals than Sheffield United. And there's some of the stragglers, and then, you know, like the like Crystal Palace and Newcastle's of the world. So while Sheffield United has been pretty good in terms of their defense, They're not gonna do much in the way of offense. So you know, if we get one or two early, which is basically what United did, we can, you know, put it out of reach.
Yeah, I mean they have a negative goal difference. They're 34-31 against, which is one of the best defenses in the league, but one of the worst offenses. And their defense right now, their kind of anchoring center back, has gotten hurt for the season. Another one of their three center backs also got hurt. I'm not sure how serious that is, but they're playing like old man Phil Jagielka back there right now, which is not promising. You know, it helped against Man U. Their goalkeeper, Dean Henderson, is on loan from United and has been one of the best keepers in the league this season. And because he was on loan, he couldn't play. And that certainly hurt them against United. But even with him, like, they just don't have an attack. They have, you know, they play a striker most games who has one goal all season. Their leading scorer went off injured at halftime. They just, you know, they made their bones grinding out shitty wins on the back of a strong defense. And if that defense is shaky, then they shouldn't give us much trouble. But, you know, famous last words.
Well, something to look forward to. Ben, where can people find you on the internet?
Oh, wow, we're done. Yeah. You can find me on Twitter at ComradeUSpurs.
Brian, where can people find you on the InnerTubes?
You can find me on Twitter at Brian_Ashlock, and you can also find me on LinkedIn hawking my line of both curative crystals that I promise can cure COVID-19 and fancy masks that will protect you from the noxious fumes given off by the crystals when you attempt to cure COVID-19. And that is at Brett Rainbow on LinkedIn. So check me out, and I will hook you up with some masks and crystals.
You can find me on Twitter.com at skipjack0079. And with a child in my house, you can find me there at all sorts of interesting hours. For Ben, for Brian, and of course for Brett Rainbow, I've been your host, Greg. Come on, you Spurs.